Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Celtic Now and to our podcast. My name is Ryan Crawford, and joining me once again this week is Robert Boyle. Robert, how's things, mate?
All good, Ryan, thanks. Yourself?
Ah, not bad, mate. Well, as we spoke about before, come on, Robert, we've got a big one this week. Special guest, obviously, it's international break, not a lot to talk about with Celtic, so we've kind of changed that about a bit. We've got current former, current professional footballer, Declan McManus, played for Dunfermline, played for Aberdeen, Fleetwood, a lot of other teams we'll obviously get involved with. We'll chat with Declan. Declan, how's things, mate?
Aye, all good. All good. Getting on with it.
As I say, it's brilliant for you to come on, mate. I know you're obviously busy with your football and stuff, and obviously family life, so I'd really appreciate you taking time out to talk to us today.
That's no problem. I don't mind at all, mate. I'm pretty open at night. I've nothing to do. Once the winds are in bed, I've nothing to do.
I just talk about family life and kids and stuff. How's obviously lockdown been with you, mate? Obviously with the family life, and how's it been with the football as well? Has it been mentally hard for you in the moment, or is it just because you're still playing, it's just business as usual?
Obviously, at the start, last season, it all got shut down and it was torture. The Wains were stuck in the house and having two Wains, they're 5 and 3, so there's no much that we could do in the house that eventually didn't get boring for them. So I was losing my head a bit at that stage. But once the football gets started back, it's... For me, I'm lucky that way that I'm still getting to go about my everyday kind of life mostly. So once that started back, it was pretty much back to normal.
You see, obviously you mentioned about obviously it all stopped and we're all a bit kind of shocked about what was happening. How was it? How has that been for yourselves? Obviously, been playing football, because obviously for us we don't go down to outset. How's it been for you as a team and obviously training and as a squad? How's it been to obviously be involved in that? How was it to take? Was it obviously a bit of a shock with the rest of us?
Aye, well, last yeah, I wouldn't have. I'd have been, if it had spoke to me when it was all first shut down, I'd have been fucking shouting and bawling probably, because I was on loan at Falkirk and we were a point after Raith Rovers when it got shut down, and they obviously ended up getting handed the title. So it was, there was so many fucking good points to the shutdown and so many bad points, and did they handle it properly? And there's a million questions that had to be answered, but that happened. And then coming into this season, it's when we first went back, you couldn't imagine what it was like. It was only about 8 boys allowed in a section of a pitch. It was non-contact. It was just all kind of passing drills, and literally, you walk once you keep your mask on until you're on the park, and as soon as you're off the park, your mask on, not allowed to go near anybody. And it's kind of it's obviously relaxed a wee bit, but we're still in terms of we're not allowed showers.
Even at the same gun.
Aye, like we played Morton last night in the Scottish Cup, and obviously I'm staying in Dunfermline now, and we're not allowed buses. Well, we're allowed buses, but our clubs decided to all travel in their own cars just to kind of if we get a COVID case and we've all been on the same bus, it can knock out the whole team. So so we're driving our own cars to most of the away games, and I was an hour and a half back. Didn't get home till after 12 last night. Pure stinking. Need to get a shower. So it's, in terms of that, that's not ideal. Like, but everyday training, you're still masked on until you're on the park. Then now it's, as I said, it's relaxed and it's normal training once you're on the park. But we're COVID tested every week and stuff, so it is still strict. But as I said, it's a bit more relaxed for the start of the season.
Because obviously, when you mention that, Robert, that must be hard for them as well, because they're doing that every day. And then obviously, us, we've stopped life, but for them, that's their job. That must be even harder because they're restricting on what they can do. And obviously, you've maybe noticed it with Celtic this season when it comes to team spirit and stuff like that. Getting new signings might not be able to mingle with Declan because of the restrictions.
It must be really hard, Brian, especially Declan saying he's been training probably the best part of training and playing 5-6 days a week, then nothing, and no getting to, as you say, mingle with the players, or you don't know when you're starting back. It must be really, really hard then. I don't know, how was that, Declan, for your mental health through lockdown and that, with not being able to play football and stuck in the house with two young kids?
It was tough, like, because since I was 15 and a half year old, I've been in a football dressing room environment every day of my life, practically. So the fact that was kind of taken away from me, you get your 6 weeks off in the summer and that, obviously, but at that point you're needing it, and it's just that kind of however many months it was that the period it was just kind of taken away from you. It wasn't there like a date that you were getting back at it. No. So it was kind of just a bit, you didn't know what was happening, obviously, as everybody else in life didn't know. But for me, it was, as I said, every day of my life was getting out of football and they're in the dressing room with the banter on that. And I just stopped. And it was tough, like, but I just kind of got in the mindset of everybody in life's going through the same thing, and having the two reins, that's a big focus that you can just put on them, that try and make their day a wee bit more funner or whatever else. So it got easier, but it was definitely tough.
How was your fitness and stuff like that? Could you keep up doing your fitness, or did you seem to lose track of your fitness in that time?
No. Well, as I said, I was on loan at Falkirk, and at the time we didn't know if the leagues were going to start back or what. So we got a exercise bike came to the house, and I was on that quite a few times a week, and then I was going at runs, and I was trying to keep on top of it. But this, for me personally, I would always say there's no fitness like training and playing fitness. You could be injured and you do the hardest running with a physio that you'll ever do, but as soon as you go into a game, it's a completely different fitness. So I wasn't as fit as I know I would be if I was training and playing, but you try to do your best, try and keep on top of it, but it's boring doing how to run. That was the worst part. I hate running myself, so that was tough, just doing all that yourself and try to keep motivated was a tough one.
But obviously, as you say, it's because it's obviously that's your full-time job, maybe it helped you in a way, because you've had a routine to keep fit, and obviously you've got kids, so you've kind of been maybe lucky that you've had a bit of a routine to keep yourself busy during it as well.
Aye. It kind of, the days I've done it, it did break up the days and stuff like that. But as I say, that for me personally, I hate doing it all myself. I get it done, but I don't enjoy it at all. And in terms of when I go back pre-season, I find it easier to do pre-season with the team than go out and motivate myself to do these ones. So, but as I say, that you just get it done. Nine times out of ten, your club will send you a sheet that you need to follow step by step anyway and keep track of it, and they'll check up on it. So you kind of have to do it anyway. So that wee incentive of knowing that they're going to be checking it obviously makes sure that you get it done. So,
see, in that sense, you're saying there, Declan, like training on your own, are you one of these guys who likes to push yourself against other players? Like, I'll keep up with him in training, or keep up with him in the fitness, maybe like the bleep test and stuff like that. You kind of, it fires you up to be against somebody rather than yourself.
For me personally, that's a big part of my game, that if I'm playing against somebody, I like to get better, even in training or whatever else. And in terms of the running, you'll never meet somebody that's happy being the first guy to drop out. So it does become competitive. You'll get the old guy there's guys that are fitter than other, and there's guys that could run all day in a game, and there's guys that could run all day in the running. It's weird. There's different types of fitness. There is, but it definitely does become kind of competitive in pre-season. And everybody, especially if it's, I don't know, you're a young boy coming back, you're trying to push into the first team or whatever else, and you want to show that you've been working hard and you're fit and you're ready. Or just a new manager or anything like that, it puts that wee bit more on it that you need to kind of show up good when you're back. So there definitely is that competitive side to it as well.
It's obviously the start of your career, kind of your youth days at Aberdeen. See early on before you met Aberdeen, see obviously in about school and stuff, but see in school we always like, I'm gonna be a football player, can I forget school, or did you just try hard in school but knowing that you were in your head you wanted to be a football player? Was that your main thing and that was your main job to be? Obviously in school you get asked, would you want to be, because you'd have been about a football player?
I was dead set, man. I think my dad says when I was about 3 years old that I was in my own head that I was going to be a football player. Whether you've got the talent or whatever else to get you there is a different story. But I was always, and it's probably a large part down to my dad being quite strict on it, that I kind of kept the focus on that. Because I never touched a drink until I was 16. All my pals growing up in Garfarmock, they're all steaming, but I don't know. I can always remember thinking, nah, football. Mm-hmm. I'll do it when I'm playing football. And just that wee bit of fear that if I'd done that, I might not get there. But I did always have that focus that I was going to be a football player. I've always been my worst critic, but I always had the belief as well that I was going to do it. So, but you kind of, it's no sounding arrogant or anything. You get the feeling when you're maybe between 10 and 13, 14 year old that you're better than most players. Or when you're, obviously, I went to Aberdeen when I was 8. So I was in that kind of pro youth setup quite early, but when you're playing boys club and that, you tend to get the boys that will stick out like a sore thumb and end up at pro youth clubs. So I knew I was half decent. I didn't think I was King Ronaldo or anything, but I always had the belief that I could go and get a bash. So I think that wee bit of discipline that I had, I say discipline, but I had a wee bit of focus when I was young, that it was the only thing I wanted today. Nothing else appealed to me.
Do you think that's something that's missing in football these days? Obviously, I don't know what happens at kind of clubs doing with the youth and stuff. Do you think maybe guys have got a lot of talent, but maybe they don't believe in themselves enough to actually get to that stage of actually signing professional?
I think that as well as I think there's more money in the game now that teams are like Celtic. It's tough for boys to come through there a lot because they've got that much money that they and that much pressure on them winning things that they go and they'll buy somebody. It's even worse down south as boys sitting 24, 25 year old at Man City. They might be on 10, 15 grand a week, but they're not played a single game and that's nearly 25. It's daft, and me personally, I could have never done that. I always wanted to go and play first team football if it meant going out on loan or walking away from Aberdeen like I did when I was a wee bit older to go and try and play. I kind of sit on a bench or sitting in a stand and watching a Saturday. I wanted to be playing football, so football's changed from when I was a youth player, and that's not even that long ago. It's got a lot softer in terms of, like, when I was a youth player, we'd done everything. We cleaned boots, we cleaned balls, we set up the training pitches, we cleaned vans, we done everything. But it kind of gave you that real life kind of kick. Because when you're going full time, you're in amongst first team players that are like earning 10 grand a week. It's like opposite ends of the scale. You're getting in on practically minimum wage and you're training with these guys, so it kind of it keeps you grounded. But me now going to different clubs, I don't see that now with the young boys. But as I say, the money as well, that it's making it harder for young boys to break through.
To see with Aberdeen, who was actually like, who was good being like the first team players? Like, obviously, like, did anybody take you under your arm and say, listen, be a bit of speed tips about how to maybe get to the first team and can I maybe get better? To any wee tips about that for the first teams?
Aye, there was a lot. Like, I was close with Gavin Ray. Oh. He used to take me in and out of training sometimes, and he was brilliant with young boys. He always try to encourage and get the best out of young boys. Like say Paul Hartley used to take me down the road to Glasgow when I couldn't drive, and he was going down the road. He would jump a few of the Glasgow boys in and take them down the road. So, and he was always the same. He was kind of towards the end of his career when he came to Aberdeen, but he was brilliant in terms of that. He always tried to help when he could, and there was a good few at Aberdeen throughout my time that were really good. There was never any that be too big time or like that. It was maybe because at that point it's not as if you're at a Man City or something like that. I think. The general feeling for the first team boys when I was young was they knew what could help and what wouldn't. So, but as I said, there was a few guys that had really good careers that were actually they had the opportunity to be arrogant and just bat you off, but they were the exact opposite. So obviously that for a young lad is really good to have somebody like that to look up to, and I enjoyed it having these guys to just talk to and ask questions and stuff like that. So.
Because obviously we're talking about Paul Hartley, obviously he was Hearts, Celtic, done really well at Celtic. for him coming on, as you say, at the end of his career, do you think he would have been maybe a guy you kind of looked up to in a way, like, this is what I maybe need to strive to be in that first team, and maybe like, see his, like, his diet, was it different for yours? How was the wee tips at that? Was it different that you kind of took for him?
Paul wasn't the absolute athlete, but he was a fucking good football player. And he had an amazing career, really, to play for Celtic and win the things he did, and play for Scotland those very things he did, and whatever else. For me personally, I would always, it wasn't off the park as much stuff that I would really zone in on. It was on the park, and just seeing these guys, like, because when you're young, you can get really uptight even in training. Just I held myself back a wee bit when I was young, just getting so uptight and worried about making bad passes or something like that. And these guys just, they didn't care, because it happens at fucking 100 times a game somebody made a bad pass. But it was just refreshing to see these guys. And as I said, for me personally, I would more look on the part, but you do pick up wee things of the guys that you're looking up to, like Paul and whoever else, that even recovery wise, they're looking after their bodies, they're playing games, they're making sure that they get their ice baths, they're doing everything they need today to make sure they're ready for the next game. So they pick up on maybe things.
See, when you were coming through at youth level, was there anybody you played at youth level and you went, wow, he's a different kettle of fish, like he's head and shoulders above other people?
But I like to say, in my youth team, we had a good youth team. We had Jacko, that's now at Rangers. We had Ryan Fraser, that's obviously went down south and done really well. I played with Ryan since I was 8. Always knew that he was brilliant, but there was actually a stage, I think it was like under 15, 17s, where he was obviously small. So at that time, it hampered them a wee bit in terms of everybody was growing and he wasn't growing as fast. And I don't know. I think they maybe questioned whether he would grow, but as soon as he went in full time, I think it was only about 2 weeks and he was in the first team under Mark McGee. Mark McGee took him out in the first team and he was training with him every day and that, because he was just a brilliant football player and it didn't matter about his height. Jacko was always fucking, Jacko's brilliant. He's so consistent in terms of his play, you very rarely see him lose the ball. We had Clarky Robertson, who's had a good career. He's went down to Rotherham and played Championship and League One and that down south. And Fraser Five was on our team. Obviously, done really well went down south. So we had a lot of good players in our team that have turned out to have good careers.
Did you win any cups or leagues at youth level?
My last year, a youth was the youth team won the youth league, but I never actually played in any of the games. I think I played one or two, but I was actually out on loan for most of it. But the year that we had like Jacko and Fivey and like we're kind of our best squad, I think we didn't win it. It was always Celtic. It was always Celtic or Rangers. We pushed them in games that we played them and stuff like that. But early the space of the season, they were always that wee bit more consistent and Celtic's youth team was brilliant when I first started up. Like say James Keaton's and that was brilliant at youth, and James Forrest and whatever else. But we pushed them, but kind of probably our best squads never won it. A couple of years later, we had a young squad under Paul Sheeran, and he won it with him. So, but I think the last few seasons, it's actually, I don't know if Celtic or Rangers have been anywhere near it in the last few seasons of the youth league. I know it's not there now, but I think the likes of Ross County and that won it as well. So, I think it's very good.
Aye.
But when I was young, it was just Celtic Rangers. It was they were the teams to beat.
See, obviously, you were saying as well, Aberdeen, the youth days. Were you in digs at Aberdeen? Like, was it digs or was it, were you staying up there yourself as you progressed in the youth team? Were you, basically, because obviously, you hear a lot of stories with professionals, you say, like, the youth days was their best days of life. They still talk to a lot of guys, and obviously, a lot of pranks, and maybe no happen to you because, as you say, football's changed. How was that kind of camaraderie in that team?
It was unbelievable, like, just obviously moving away at like 15 and a half or something. I was when I moved up to Aberdeen myself. When you first move up, you do go into digs. The first place we stayed, and then we moved to another family, and they were brilliant. Just like having your own family. Obviously, it wasn't your family, but they were brilliant. They were, had your dinner on. They actually, I think that the couple actually loved me and my mate Jamie Masson, that we shared the digs, and they loved us. They proper looked after us, and that made it a lot easier, obviously, because you had that kind of family set up that you were coming home, your dinner was made, and the woman was brilliant. She would do your washing, she cleaned your room and everything. She'd done a lot more than she probably should have, and she was paid for, but she was brilliant. I was 17, and I needed my own space. I wanted to go out and just do it myself, because as soon as I moved up there, I was completely independent anyway. So, and being away from him 90% of the year, they become self-efficient. And I wanted my own space. So I was only about 17 when I went and got my own flat. And I loved it. Just having your own space and just being a proper grown up. It was a good part of the life. But as you're saying, with the camaraderie and that, the youth team dressing room was unbelievable. Just non stop, every day, just pranks and try to piss after the first team boys, and just non stop. And then obviously you would get him to either the digs or your flat, and you'd be sharing with your teammates and just gone for meals all the time, or going out places all the time. And that's a big thing about COVID. It's hard to get a team spirit when you're just going out to training, you're talking to the boys in the training part, and then you're away, you're not going for a coffee, you're not going for meals, you can't go nights out or whatever. It's all big parts of it, and that's been the weirdest thing about this season. But the youth days were unbelievable.
You made your debut against Dunfermline for Aberdeen. How was that?
It was a bit surreal. Just I was in and around the first team at the time, and I was a few times before that because I was scoring a lot of goals for the youth. Craig Brown had said a few times. Craig Brown was brilliant when he rated me highly, and he'd said to me a few times, like, be ready. You're going to get your shot and that. And so I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks I was on the bench. I was like, when's it going to happen? And then we went to Dunfermline, and I don't know if we were 2-0 down when I first came on. But we went 2-0 down, I think, and I was thinking, right, surely he's just going to chuck me on here, because it was towards the end of the game, and the team was just wide-eyed as he just knew there was no chances of getting back in the game. And my dad and my wee granddad was there. Obviously, we've been close to Glasgow, so I was like, it's perfect time to go on. And he turned around and he shouted me and my best mate, Jamie Masson, that had shared the digs and flats with him, and we made our debuts at the same time. So it was a wee bit surreal, but just coming on and you're playing in front of fans and everything else. So obviously, it wasn't the biggest of crowds in the world, but just coming on and it was just a bit surreal. Just pure adrenaline that you're running on, to be honest. But again, it gives you a wee bit of, although you know there's still millions of work to be done, it kind of gives you that wee feeling I made it.
A bit of taste for it to keep progressing. Because as you say, but I've heard a lot of stories about Craig Brown, how he was funny, he was very good with the players. And if a guy, like, maybe as a young guy like yourself, maybe him telling you that, you might be thinking, shit, I'm actually all right here. I might be doing all right here if he's praising me highly and obviously getting your debut. He must have had a lot of faith in you.
Aye, well, it was obviously Craig Brown and Archie Knox was his assistant. And obviously, you know, Archie Knox was Fergie's number two. Mm-hmm. The two of them had unbelievable careers. In management and coaching. Like I say, obviously I was pretty young, but I knew Craig Brown, what he'd done with Scotland and whatever else. And just these sort of guys, you get the kind of aura of them that they've been places and they've done things. So when I was obviously really young, he came in, I think, when I was 16, and it was kind of towards the end of the season, I think. And then the next season, turned 17, and I started really kicking on with the youth team and scoring a lot of goals. And I remember one night we were playing Murrell in a youth team game at Pittodrie, and they came and they watched, and I scored a hat-trick. And I'd scored by these a goal that it was their corner and it got headed out to the edge, and I took it through their box and scored. And he came in after the game and he pulled me out the dressing room, and the coach was speaking, the youth team coach, and he was like, that's the best goal I've ever seen. And I was like, all right, mate. I'd like, kind of think he was joking, but he's like, he just came out the boy and just went, I'm going to offer you a 3-year first team deal. And I was like, what? And he's like, don't accept it less than any of the younger boys in the first team dressing room are on, and get the same money as them. And I want you in my squad next year. And I was just like, you know, blown away a wee bit. So I always knew that he really rated me. To be honest, I'm glad that it was him that did give me my debut, because it's an RB thing. Thing that I can say that a manager of his quality was a guy that believed in me first. So,
because I think you're talking about Craig Brown actually sent you what a goal. To him, it might have not been, but for him to say that to you, he's maybe saying that for a reason, and that's maybe one reason maybe why his man management was really good, because wee things like that help you. And I don't, maybe fans don't really see that, what happens inside stadiums and training ground, like what managers actually do. It might not be tactics, it might be wee things like that that actually makes you go, shit, that's, oh, thanks a lot. And then you start progressing that and make sure you're kind of maybe doing that all the time because you're knowing what he's seen. And I think that's brilliant for him, personally, to me. Yeah. I think that's brilliant to give you, to maybe to him, he's not doing anything, but he is doing stuff that's maybe about a mind game, saying, well, that's brilliant. You're thinking, oh, shit, cheers. You know what I mean?
When he was saying it, obviously, I knew it was a good goal. You don't not very often get the ball in one half and run all the way and score, but him and Archie, it's like they were complete opposites, but they both had that aura. Like, you listen to Craig Brown because he knew what he was talking about. He was a kind of good cop. He would always be calm with you, and if you'd done something wrong, he would kind of try and come across in a good way to help you. Whereas Archie was the tough one, the bad cop. Archie was mental, but you also listened and you took everything he said. So the two of them were good in their own ways. So for the two of them to be obviously looking at me, 17-year-old, and believing that I can do something was a big thing for me.
See, Archie Knox and you're saying Craig Brown, did they tell you any like funny stories of the years I've been managers, like maybe being at the World Cup 98 or Craig Brown, then funny that he could tell you?
I remember them. They did tell a few stories, but they were older. They were old when they came in, older guys. So it wasn't like a young manager would be kind of in chatting away to you, and that it would sometimes be telling stories, and you would listen in that. But off the top of my head, I can't really think of any. Archie used to talk about Fergie a lot, and how the two of them, because people would say Archie was mental, and he'd be like, "Now should have seen me and Fergie together," and stuff like that. Because the two of them, he's like, "Hair dryer treatment, you'd never seen anything like it." But it was just mental. Every morning he'd come in, me, Ryan Fraser, obviously was, and basically in the first team at the time, and he was. But they obviously kind of, Archie would try and keep on grounded. He would always, but Risey's the most grounded guy in the world. Like, literally, probably a millionaire now, and he just wouldn't, you walk by him in the street, he just wouldn't even notice. But he used to get his granddad to drive him at training, and he had to be in for like 8:30 because Archie would be in, and Archie, you would just hear Archie shout at his room, go, "Rizo, where's my tea?" Rizey had to go and make his tea and toast in that every morning. If there was one bit of fucking burnt bread on his plate, it would go mental. But just it was just proper old school, but it was really good.
That's lacking football now. See that you're saying a Fergie shouting at players and stuff like that. Do you think that side of football is lost? And it's, to me, as a young boy growing up, that would make me more determined. But I think nowadays, young boys would go in there and you can't really do with them football now. I think that's quite sad.
Aye, the thing is, I've only been playing 10 years now, but even 10 years ago when I first went in, it's completely changed. Like, if you were a wilting flower, you had no chance. Like, yeah, you had to take it and do better, or you just win the last. And now I feel like, obviously I'm no coaching or that, but I feel like they kind of hold themselves back sometimes and think, oh, I can't say that. Or like, you're seeing like youth team coaches getting took to court and all that for the way they're treating youth players and shouting at them too much. And I think It was a youth team coach down south recent, a couple of years ago, that got sacked for something that he was bullying or something.
I can't remember the story, Declan, but I can remember the story. I think it was bullying or something, wasn't it?
But see, 10 years ago, we get bullied every single day of our lives then. Because literally, a youth team coach would come in and he would go, "Jobs now. Like, you're no leaving here. Don't care what time it is until your job's done." And that sort of stuff just doesn't happen now. Like, obviously, I see young boys and they don't need to clean a boot. They don't need to, we had to clean balls and see in like winter days, isn't it? Oh, Jesus. You're standing outside and it's snowing and you're cleaning balls and boots and scraping. They had to be spotless and hit your players a bit for them coming in the next morning. Gale force winds and you're carrying like full size goals. So it has got a lot softer for me. And in terms of what you're saying about coaches and that, I do feel like they have to hold themselves back there and not quite as strict and as hard as they were when I was 15, 16.
You can imagine an Alex Ferguson in the modern game, he wouldn't last a month, I don't think, at any club.
Nah. That's the thing, like, he's the greatest manager in the world and he obviously got the best out of his players for what he went and done, and you just don't see that now. It's just for me the whole game is getting softer, but I think that's just the whole world's getting softer. You no, can't see it in the end, but that has definitely got a lot softer since, even as I say, I've only been 10 years, but since then it's changed massively.
Rob, and your youth days at Aberdeen, you went on loan to was it Morton and Agua? Was that just to get game time and obviously just to get more experience of playing football?
Aye, definitely. It was Alawa first. It was when Paul got the job at Alawa, and they get promoted to the championship, and I was kind of at that stage where I was playing youth. I was scoring most weeks, and it just wasn't it testing me the way that I needed to be tested, and I went to Alawa, and it was a culture shock. It was because I was in a team that was getting into games trying not to get beat. Mm-hmm. And you would maybe go through a whole game and you would need to have a chance, a sight of goal. And it was just completely different. And it didn't work for me. I was there 6 months and for whatever reason, I didn't get going in terms of goals. For the most part, I would do all right. I would do a job for the team and that. But in terms of goals, I was used to scoring week in, week out. It wasn't happening. So I was there 6 months and I only scored once, and as I said, it could have worked out negative in terms of people looking in outside and see I scored one goal, and I think it was 17 or 18 games, but for me I wouldn't change it because it made me realise that there's so much merit. Like, when you step into a man's game, it's 100 times harder than a youth team game. So I learned a lot, and it set me up nicely for when I did go to Morton the next season on loan. And obviously, I knew what I was walking into, and I managed to hit the ground running there.
Because obviously, you were nominated for a year, and obviously, I think you won it as well, so obviously you must have done well at Morton, and I think the Morton fans do kind of take to you, I think, a bit, because obviously you've scored a few goals and I think you've done really well there.
I did a really good season. I think I scored 23 goals, and obviously, as you say, I won Player of the Year, we won the league, and it was just a kind of surreal year for me. It was everything went good and everything happened the way I wanted it to happen, and just really enjoyed my football. Just was under Jim Duffy, and Jim Duffy was brilliant. He's still have so much respect for Jim. He done so much for my game. He just every Saturday, as soon as I went in, he just had that belief in me. He just let me go and play. He wouldn't really coach me in terms of wanting me to do particular things in games. He would just kind of say to me, go and do your thing. And he used to say to me, I don't care how bad you're playing the game. I know you're going to get a chance and I know you'll take it. So going into a game and you're thinking, manager knows, isn't he bothered by how my performance is? If I go and get my goal, then I'm playing next week. So it was that sort of pressure taking off it. And as I said, I hit the ground running quite early, and I think I had 5 goals or something in my first 3 games. And just if you get that start, it does kick you on and give you that confidence. So, but I was in a good team at that level. We were a good team, and we created a lot of chances, which obviously helps as a striker. If you're getting the chances, you're going to take them. So it was just a good fit for me, and as I said, everything went the way I wanted it.
See, the modern game of football, Declan, do you feel it's overcoached and over tactics now, rather than just maybe letting a guy like yourself express himself? Like, just you do what you do up front, rather than I want you to be here, I want you to work with defenders, I want you pushing it left, you know. And that modern game of football, sometimes people are just overcoached and too much tactics are brought into football.
For me, sometimes there's just too much talk, isn't it, the opposition team. And like, I saw the other day Russell Martin speaking about his MK Dons team, and he was asked, have you got a plan B? Because he's got a style of play, and everybody can see he's got a style of play, and it wasn't working. I think they'd lost 3 or 4 games in a row. And he went, no, I don't need a plan B. You just need to get better at the plan A. And that, for me, if I was by his players, that's brilliant. Like, because you've got a way of playing, and he's set on it. And whatever way you put, like, Man City, they've got a style of play. Disney always work, and they're some of the best players in the world. They get beat sometimes as well. Not very often, but they get beat. So for me, if I was a manager, I was a coach, I would have a style of play and I would be set on it. And obviously I would look at the opposition and their strengths and whatever else. But for me, my sole focus would be on my team and my team's strengths, and what we can do to hurt the opposition. Because you focus on yourselves, you're focusing on outscoring the other team. Simple as that. You outscore the other team, you win the game. So that would be, if I was walking into a coaching job, that would be for me. But I do think there's too much to and fro in terms of, like, as I said, too much focus on opposition teams, and sometimes it's a hard one. Like say Atletico Madrid, and that they've been brilliant at just throughout the years in the Champions League, stifling teams to the point of it's unbelievable teams are playing against and they can't score against them. But that again comes back to that's their style of play. And it works. It doesn't always work. There'll be games that teams get a bit of luck, or they just have a bad night. But it's just that one style of play that you stick to, and you, doesn't matter if it goes bad one night, it's going to work the next night.
But, so see yourself as a striker, do you like to play alongside a striker, or do you like to play their own role? What sort of striker are you, for people who's listening in?
Even this season, I've done both. I think a large part of the season I've actually been up there myself, and it's good in terms of when it goes right, you know you've been a huge part of what the team's achieved in that game, because you're up there, and I'm generally good holding the ball, and I'm quick enough that I can get in behind in that as well. So, and I've always been reasonably strong, so I can do. I feel obviously to the level that I'm playing at, I can do a job like that. There's obviously strikers in the world that are unbelievable, regardless if they play their cell or no. But I feel for me personally, I can do both, and I enjoy doing both because I'm quite unselfish, maybe too unselfish at times in terms of not focusing on scoring as many goals as I want to. But if I had to choose, I think most strikers will choose to play with somebody, as it kind of halves your workload, because at times if you're up there yourself and your team's not got a lot of the ball, you're isolated and you're literally getting the ball up to you, you're trying to win fouls, you're just trying to get the team up the park, and if you're not doing that, then you know it's just going straight back on top of the team. There's a lot of responsibility, but I think, as I said, every striker would choose to have somebody up there with them.
It's mostly the modern game now, a bit deck on it, is one striker, like 4-2-3-1 or kind of 4-3-3. That's kind of the way football's gone. For when I was young, it was 4-4-2 was the tactic that everybody used.
Aye. And that's the thing. If you're up there yourself, it is good if you've got that kind of, as you say, 4-2-3-1, and maybe the number 10 is a wee bit adventurous and he goes beyond you, and that makes it easier. That's almost like playing with a 2, or the 4-3-3, and the two wider men don't just stay wide all the time. If they just stay wide, there's just acres of spaces between you and them, and you can get snuffed out easily. It can work both ways. It's, as I say, but as long as you've got people in the room, if you're up there yourself, then it's all right. I don't mind that. As long as you're, because 9 times out of 10, if you're up there yourself, you've got maximum of 2-3 touches before somebody, 2 or 3 men are in you. So as long as you're taking a touch and you've got somebody close enough that you can just pop it off and go again, then it does make your job easier.
Yeah. Because obviously, after your loan spells, you went to Fleetwood. How did that move come about? And obviously as well, how's life down south compared to up here? Like, as well with the football, like obviously Celtic Rangers up here, we think it's massive and blah, blah, blah. How do they take that down there? And obviously Fleetwood, how is Fleetwood for you? Because again, that's quite a decent level as well down there. And I think, were they know kind of buying a lot of players at that team as well, Fleetwood?
Hi, bro. The chairman, obviously, how the move came about was just the season I had at Morton. My agent had been contacted off them and they'd watched a few of my games, and it just kind of spiralled from there. They were interested and I went and met them. But I'd actually been offered another contract at Aberdeen under Derek McInnes, and I just felt at the time that, as I said earlier, that I would never want to be part of the furniture, and I felt I would have been. I would have played now and again, or I'd maybe get a wee sniff here or there, but that to me it's not enough. I want to play games, and that's not, it's not like an arrogant thing, it's just when I was wee, I wanted to be a football player because I wanted to play on a Saturday, and when you're not playing on a Saturday, it's rubbish. And as much as I'd grown up with Aberdeen, I'd been there since I was 8, I just thought it was just time that I had to go and try something new, and I always wanted to go down south, I always wanted to try it, and I felt that would have been a good stepping stone. So I went and met Graham Alexander, and he was brilliant, and I signed maybe, I think it was about a week after I finished the season with Morton. I turned in the deal with Aberdeen and went in there. So, but it was different in terms of, I don't mean that as Scottish teams are not as serious or professional, but just the feel for the players.
Mm-hmm.
It's made an arrogance down there, like playing League One, but these boys act like they're
superstars.
Not like a prick, but
no, I get you.
They've got more arrogance about them, and then just everybody's an athlete. Just everybody's non-stop gym and stuff in there. So that was the only major differences for me. But standard for me, you get obviously in League One when I was doing the big clubs, you had Sheffield United and all that. So you had really good players. So many teams, and then in the lower part of the league, there's some players that weren't very good. So for me, it wasn't that all that different. I think down south, when you hit the Championship, that's when you start to see like really, really good players. So it was different for me, and I went down and I started really well. I scored my debut. And I think it was maybe about 10 games in, Graham Alexander. I was away with Scotland, and Graham Alexander got sacked just before I went. So when I was with Scotland, and when I was away, Stephen Presley got the job, and I came back, and I just very rarely played ever since. For whatever reason, it just didn't take a liking to me, and that was it. It was over before it even began, because your face just doesn't fit. For whatever reason, I used to ask him, what am I no damn right, or what do I need to work on? I never really get anything back off him. So for me, I don't blame myself for that.
Do you feel he was dead arrogant, Presley?
Is he
set in his
ways, basically?
Ways type of thing.
Aye, but he's assured himself and all that, but he just had his
opinions.
His opinions, and nothing would change him.
Was it pure different styles of play, I take it, for Graham Alexander to Presley then?
Aye. He came in and he had, like, his everyday training, all that. I enjoyed all that. It was high intensity. It was really competitive. He would do competitions for people who scored the most goals throughout the month and all that. And he would do hotel getaways for you and the missus, whoever scored the most or won the most games in training or whatever else. So I enjoyed all that. It was just, for me personally, you just couldn't speak to him. He just didn't give you much. As I said, I was only young, so I would say to him, like, what do I need today to get in your team? And there was times he would say to me, you're the best finisher at the club. And I'm like, well, I'm sitting in the stands, so how does that make sense to me? But what didn't help me was my missus had my first kid, but she came up the road early in Edinburgh to have the baby, because we didn't want the baby to be English. But she came up early, so I was kind of waiting in limbo, waiting on the text. I got the text, and I missed I came up the road, I think it was a Tuesday night, a Monday night, a Saturday night, so I'm miles off it, but I'd come up the road anyway, and I'd missed, I think it was 3 days of training in total. And it was him that he said to me, look, you don't want to miss a bus for your first child. So I was like, right, me bother. So first chance I got, I was straight back down, because I knew I couldn't miss too much. I had to be training to have a chance of playing. I got down, and he never said a word really in the training days and that. And then we went down to, I think it was Gillingham on my way, so it was a good 6 hour trek on a bus, and he'd left me out. And he said, oh, you've been off for a few days. And I was like, but you tell me. So that, just that sort of stuff, it didn't help, but looking back on the whole football thing, there's things that I wasn't used to that they were expecting anyway, but when I first went down, but like your body fats and all that, we never really done that at Aberdeen, so my body fat was a wee bit higher than it was meant to be. But just apart from that, I kind of look back at it and blame myself really. I don't feel, because I just once Presley came, I just wasn't given the opportunity, and I can't blame myself for it.
Because I think for me, obviously, it's for me personally, listen, that's quite hard as a player. I mean, you're trying your hardest, and yeah, I see a lot of players maybe when you ask the manager, like, why am I not playing? But you've actually went up and went, listen, I want to play, why am I not playing? We don't need it. You're actually asking for maybe a bit of advice. How do I get better? How can I make a contribution to your team? And as a manager, maybe some guys maybe will take to that and won't do anything. But I think maybe these days now, I don't think you can do that now. I think you maybe need to explain to guys. I think guys maybe Declan, they maybe respect you more if you tell them the truth and just say, listen, this is why you're not playing. This is what you need to do, and then just go and do it.
100%. I've been in managers' offices before, and I've said to them, look, I'm not a wee boy. Like, I can take whatever you're going to say to me. You don't like me personally. You don't like me as a football player. Just tell me, then we know where we're at. So I would always say that to them. I have no qualms about saying that to them. Because, see, you sit in a football environment, and like I was at Fleetwood, I didn't know where I was coming or going, because I wasn't gave any definite, like, nah, you're no good enough, or you need to do this, you need to do that. It was kind of left in limbo, and so I was in my own head, like, what am I doing wrong? It did put me in a dark place when I was doing that. And as soon as it came to the next transfer window, I knew I had to go out and moan and just go and play again. Because sitting, as I said earlier, I kind of just sit and watch on a Saturday. It's just not me. I think I would be the exact same if I was on $200,000 a week. I still couldn't sit and watch on a Saturday. I would have to be out and loan and playing and just putting a strip on a Saturday. So that was a big thing. Like, for me, as I said, I would always go in. If I'm not playing, I'll always speak to the manager, and I'll always try and... Managers will try and keep you on side. So I feel like 9 times out of 10, they're not quite as honest as they want to be. But for me, I always try and get out of them, but what I'm doing wrong, or what I've done wrong, or what I need to do, so that I know my own head what needs to be done, or if there is anything that can be done. That's major for me. I would always ask a question.
Yeah, went to Dunfermline your first time then. How was that?
Aye, it was good. It was after a bad loan spell at Raith Rovers. Before that, it just didn't work. We had a good team. just for whatever reason, we started the season really well. And then I think after 10 games, we were sitting top. And then I think we went 17, 18 games without actually winning a game. So it just went from that to that. And so going off that bad season, and that was when I was out of contract at Fleetwood after that season. So I was kind of, in that summer, I was thinking, I've not had the greatest of seasons. We've obviously went on loan and I've got relegated by the team, and I was worried, like, what's next? So when Dunfermline came up and I managed to get it done, that after the first couple of weeks in pre-season, I knew I was going to enjoy it. Like, I just felt back to my best, and I felt like just general vibe for the players that I was playing with, and that they knew I was a big part of what we wanted today. So just that feeling, I was playing up front with Nicky Clark, but I was more a number 10. And I knew I was a big part of everything that we're trying today. So I just really enjoyed my football. I didn't score as many goals as I probably wanted to. I think I got 13. But I think that season, it's never been officiated, but I'm sure I got like 14 assists, but I'm sure some of the stats that I'd looked back on, I'd say that I'd only ended up with about 8 or something. But I'm sure I'd known that, because me and Mickey together had something like 40 odd goal involvements between us. So just as I say, just loved my football. The fans took to me, and the boys that I was playing with took to me, and just get the love back again. So that was a big part, because as I said, the season before and obviously being at Fleetwood and no going well when Presley came in, that it was a couple of seasons where it wasn't gone how I wanted it to go, and for that going out of Dunfermline and it clicked again, it was a big thing for me.
Did you feel just refreshed after, as you say, being at Fleetwood, being away from your missus, your newborn baby, and then no work at Rafe, and then got to Dunfermline? Did you just feel like a lease of life again, back into football and really enjoying it again for two seasons that you probably say that, not that you'd forget, but just a bad time in football?
Aye, because you kind of, although I wasn't getting much at Fleetwood in terms of kind of information on what I was doing wrong or whatever else, you doubt yourself, because you're not playing. So there's got to be something. So you're doubting yourself all the time. And obviously the season at Rafe, we're getting relegated, and that just, the doubt was creeping in, and I was just not enjoying it. I hadn't enjoyed it for a couple of years. And I was just at that kind of, I felt, it wasn't a make or break, but it was almost there that I was, the next place I went, I had to work. And thankfully, Dunfermline was a really good fit at the time. And I went in and I just hit the ground running and got straight back into enjoying football again. As I said, it was massive for me.
As well, obviously, they're saying how you were refreshed on Fairmont, and then obviously went to Ross County. Promotion, won the Challenge Cup, so that's obviously a successful season, mate. Obviously, again, winning trophies, and I think a lot of guys these days, again, this is just maybe me looking for an outset as a fan. Some guys might take, as he got the ladder, it's maybe a bit of money. But when I played, it was obviously, as a Celtic fan, it was all about just playing with Celtic, just playing football. And even when I played 21s and amateur, it was just about winning trophies and playing football. And I think at Ross County, you won trophies. So that's probably a big part of your kind of career, maybe, is winning trophies as well.
Aye, when obviously, as I said, I loved my year at Dunfermline, but it was when Ross County came up, it was a case of I knew that they were building a squad that was going to look to go straight back up into the Premier League. So I knew it was a case of I was joining a team that was going to be challenging. Mm-hmm. And that was, for me, what I wanted the next step to be. I wanted to be on a team that was going to be challenging for the Championship. And obviously, the added bonus of the Edinburgh Cup that we won. But the big major thing was going to a team that were challenging to win the Championship and go and play in the Premiership again. So I just kind of got the general feeling when I was signing the squad that was there, it was too good for the level, and for me to be asked to join it, it was too hard to turn down. Just the thought of going there and winning trophies and winning things, it was what I wanted. That's what every, I don't, as you say, there is terms of cases now that boys will go and get bigger wages, but for me, I seen the other day actually a thing, I don't know if you've seen it, about Harry Kane and John O'Shea, who would you rather?
Aye.
And 100%, I would rather have John O'Shea's career. I would rather be Harry Kane. It's a tough one because I'm a striker and I see him, he's unbelievable. But he would rather have John O'Shea's career. He's won just about everything. And that was the big thing about going to Ross County, was I knew I was going into a team that was going to be challenging for titles. So, as you say, thankfully we did. We went and done a double that season, which was brilliant.
See, up at Ross County, I've heard rumours about the guy owns them really good with the players, the management, and the training facilities are meant to be above standard for a team of Ross County. And that, how is that?
I definitely, it's kind of, you hear about it, but you don't actually realise until you're up there. Like, it's brilliant. Like, and the chairman's brilliant as well. Like, everything's taken care of. Like, the amount of money it must bleed into that club is outrageous, because everything's to the highest of standards that it could possibly do it. And obviously I played up there for a while. We never had the biggest support by any means. So for them to be putting that much money into the club and the facilities, and when he's, I dare say he's not getting anywhere near that back, is massive credit to him, because he's took the club from nothing to a Premiership team. Just on the facilities, when you go up there, you realise you've got everything that you need. You get gyms and canteens and astro pitches, grass pitches, everything that you possibly need to go and better yourself. So that was another thing that when I went up there, that was really refreshing to see. That, because like say, obviously Dunfermline don't have a riding training ground and all that, and that's a big thing for a big selling point, I think, for football players, is you're going to a club with facilities like that, where you're no travelling to go to training grounds and whatever else it is. It does make things a lot easier and a lot better. So when I went up there, it was brilliant in terms of that.
See, obviously at Ross County, like obviously see, you were playing with probably not substandard, but better standard players for that kind of level, obviously came down for the Premier League. There's our guys like Ross Stewart, Michael Gardine, Barista over there. Could you tell that they were going to, obviously Michael Gardine's had a pretty good career, obviously come to Celtic, but now Ross Stewart's moved in suddenly. Could you tell he was going to kind of progress the way he was going?
At the start of the season, in the Championship, Big Roscoe, I think they had the kind of mindset of he's one for the future. And it would be kind of in and out. And then it was about halfway through the season that he started playing, and just just his height is just a massive part of his game. Like he's brilliant there, and he's so useful in games. Just pure and simply because he's height, but he's also a good football player, and he's quick as well for a big guy. So you could tell that there's players that have got like attributes like that. They're tall or they're quick or whatever else, and they've got a chance in the game because they've been blessed with a wee bit of something like that. Mm-hmm. But his height and his, but he backs it up with being brilliant in the air, and as I said, he's good with his feet as well. So he did know he had it. Like Midge is just a seasoned pro, but he's still one of the sharpest guys I've ever seen on a ball. For his age, he's lightning with the ball. But I just playing with him and seeing a career he's managed to get himself, and he's won things and played a silly amount of games in the Premier League and whatever else. So you know you were in a squad of very talented players anyway.
Sorry, Declan. Reminds me of Peter Crouch. You look at these guys and you go, they don't look like football players, but when you see them, they're really good at everything they do. It's weird. And Big Ross Stewart just reminded me of Peter Crouch in that sense. Looking at him, he's just that big gangly looking guy. Yeah, well,
his nickname was Crouchy.
Was it?
As you say, he's got a good touch. He's quick as well for a big guy, and just unbelievable in the air, like just to a point of there's very minimal amount of defenders that will be able to deal with him there. So just having that out ball, like hanging balls up in the bolts or corners or anything like that, he's very useful in terms of that. But he just, once, as I said, once he got into the team, he just hit the ground running and he kind of never looked back. And obviously, for me, he deserved a chance to get in and get that moving. And for me, hopefully it works out for him. I know he scored in his debut a couple of weeks ago, so hopefully he can kick on again.
Good to hear.
There's obviously another count as well. I can remember, don't quote if I'm wrong, but I think I see on your Instagram the promotion party in Magaluf. I seen it, I was like, it's amazing. I think it was quite early on in the season, wasn't it? In the Magaluf season, he's went, wasn't it? I think it was in the summer, wasn't it?
It was right at the start of May. And it was only 4 days, but it's just 4 days non-stop. It's
madness.
Just the kind of the whole gone through the whole season and end up winning two titles and obviously the wee thing added bonus that you're getting promoted to the Premier League is just 4 days and the chairman had paid for it all and he gave us a kitty and just it was brilliant just getting away and just having that piss up with the boys. It's just comes out of carnage at times, but it's brilliant, honestly.
You must have a story. It's a funny story, especially with booze involved.
Michael Gardine was putting fags out my belly, but probably the funniest one, the weirdest one would be my missus' pal ended up in this bar that we were in with a boyfriend. And we'd all bounced about in the street, bobbies out and everything, everywhere. I swear to God, I'm sure her pal must have seen all of us naked because we just kept scanning each other. And Michael Gardine's a worse for it. You could be standing there and scanning you. Everything's out on show. And he just gets naked regardless. He's just mental. Like,
is it true that he shot the Celtic Park penalties area?
Aye, penalty spot. Aye. Yeah, he's telling us a story about when he was only young, he was Gordon Strachan's manager. and he was, I think it was Chris Sutton had said, it was either Chris Sutton or Alan Thompson said to him, because they knew he was a screwball, he said to him, you know, just going out to the warm-up, and obviously the big section of boys, they'll put all the boys together for whatever they're going to do in the passing row. And I think it was either Chris Sutton or Alan Thompson said to him, got them 250 boys. He's just went up and fucking leathered these boys, 250 them, everywhere, scattered them around the training ground. And I think Gordon Stratton just said to him, get the fuck. he's just carnage. Honestly, he's carnage. You can't, on a night out with him, you just can't trust a word that he says. Or if he's trying to hand you a beer, you just don't know what's in that beer. Good day.
Brilliant.
Seeing you mention that, that's brilliant for, like, see, like you mentioned, night shooting, having a bit of banter. And I think that, as you mentioned, the teamy spirit, and obviously due to COVID, that's not happening. That's maybe why you were such a winning team as well, because you had all that in the dressing room.
I definitely, it's a massive thing. See, just day to day training, just the chat in the dressing room and the banter and pranking each other and just taking a piss at each other every day is massive. Honestly, you really get to know boys a lot better on a personal level. Like, and just going for coffees and that, just honestly, like, you'd have coffee clubs and there'd be 5-6 boys that go for a coffee every day, and just you can't even do that now. So, like, car sharing and all that, you know, like car share and car schools, and that's a massive thing, a massive part of it all, and especially when it's like, say, Ross County, where if you're like, it's that far away that there's no many boys that are actually from the Highlands. Mm-hmm. So it's mostly all boys that are either moved up with their missies, or they've moved up families, or they've moved up themselves. So everybody's kind of on the same boat in terms of in the team. So that was good that way. Like Keith Watson and Big Carl Morris and all that, they always used to come out to your house for dinner, or we'd go to theirs, or just stuff like that. Just we had a car school, like Ross Draper and all that, and just that general banter is just, it's just not there to me, because you just don't get a chance to. You get to know the boys a lot better, as I said, on a lot more personal level instead of just on the training part. For me, it's a massive thing.
You ended up back in loan spell at Falkirk. You end up the top goal scorer. How was that?
We'd obviously get promoted with County, and I'd every aspiration of going and playing in the Premiership. But as I explained to you earlier, I'd spoke to the managers and they'd said to me, like, because the Championship season I actually mostly played out wide, which was kind of foreign to me, and I knew I would do a job, and I did do a job for the most part. And, I didn't fully love it. It was not what I was used to, but I was doing the job, so I was enjoying it, and we were winning games, so it obviously softened the blow. But when I was getting into the Premiership, I'd spoke to the manager, and he'd said, look, Falkirk have asked about you. It was actually through Midge. Midge had met Gray McKinnon and Dundee, and he'd said, what about the boy McManus? And Midge was like, I don't really know what's happening, but he asked a question. So it came for that, because I wasn't on any transfer lists or anything like that. Or, my agent had to put any words out there, so it was kind of out the blue. And the managers had said to me, look, for what you gave us last year and all that, like, we want to be honest with you. You might play 20 games here and it might be brilliant. He said, you might only play 10. At this stage right now, we're not 100% sure what we can offer you in terms of game time. And I just said, that's brand new. Like, for me, I would rather go and play 30, 40 games than guaranteed than maybe have 10, 20 in the Premiership. For me, it doesn't matter about the level. If I'm not getting the chance to go and date at that level, then I'll drop down and I'll play 30, 40 games and I'll go and prove myself again. So that's what I decided today, and I managed to get the rest of the season that back down the road eventually. And the rain's back down there because her family's Edinburgh as well. So, but just a case of what I go and play again, what I go and play in my position and score goals. And as you say, I managed to do that. I hit the ground running again and never really looked back. Just really enjoyed it. The fans really took to me, because before that I was a big enemy of Falkirk. They didn't like me very much, but if you're scoring goals, then fans are fickle and they'll take to you. So thankfully I was, and I enjoyed every minute. And when Ray got sacked, it was Lee and Kratz coming, and obviously I knew Lee really well anyway, so that helped as well. And I just, as I said, I never looked back. I just enjoyed my football and scoring goals again.
So obviously after Falkirk knew Dunfermline, obviously the point there before, as you spoke about how you turned up to Dunfermline in your first spell and you kind of knew you would kind of suit the play and you'd be suit playing there. And is that why you kind of went back to this spell now?
Well, obviously when I was leaving Dunfermline for County at the time, it was a hard decision because the season had went so well for me personally. And the chairman at Dunfermline had tried his best to keep me, and it was just that aspect I wanted to go and win trophies, and I felt that my opportunity was better at County at the time. So it was a tough decision because I was walking away from something that I know was working. So when it was actually during the Falkirk loan spell, I'd spoke to Stevie Crawford in the January, because it was County were trying to get me out of my wage paid. So there was a couple of teams down south that had said they'd pay more, and it was kind of like they were pushing it to Falkirk, look, these teams are willing to pay more. Mm-hmm. And Dunfermline was one of them as well. So I spoke to Stevie, and it was a tough one to not back again, because I knew coming here I'm loved, and I love the people and the club and that. So I knew everything was going to be good. But with Falkirk, I was in a position where it was going really well. I think I 19 goals or something by January, and I was just like in the mindset of why didn't I change it right now? Like, I'm under no pressure to change it. So I'd say to him, look, right now it's a no. I'd rather just stay where I'm at and do what's working for me, and then, like, hopefully if you're still interested in the summer when I'm on a free, then I can speak to you then. So when it came up again, literally as soon as kind of football started to pick up again after lockdown or during lockdown, it was one of the first phone calls that I got again. So it was done pretty quick. And since the start of the season, I just kind of took off when I left here. It just feels the exact same. I'm enjoying my football, and just the whole club. It just seemed to click me. So
I think it's good as well when you're saying you kind of click with the club. It's good that I think it's these days some players fit certain clubs. Do you think maybe you sit Dunfermline?
I just obviously the first spell gone so well for me personally, but just I think in terms of just the fact the fans and the people, because you get in a football club, you get people that are in jobs in the club that are genuine fans of the club, and these people seem to just take to me and really appreciate what I was gaining and my work rate and just gaining everything that I could for the club. So in terms of that, it just clicked that I knew I was appreciated, and it's a big thing when you're a football player that you're somewhere that you know you're appreciated, and you know that your jobs make a difference, that what you're doing make a difference to these people. So in terms of that, it just kind of clicked straight back into where it was left. So it was a big thing for me this season as well.
You were Scotland under 18s, 19s, and 21s. How was that representing your country at all levels?
It was the first. I remember the first kind of call up that I got under 18s, and that wasn't like a tournament squad, because there's no tournaments at under 18s. It was just a kind of friendly squad in terms of they were kind of looking at the players that were going into the under 19s. Set up for the Euros and that the following year, so it was my first call up, and it was a wee bit surreal. It's like it's because it, the setup at the youth levels is all basically as good as what the A team will get, right? In terms of just everything's looked after for you, and obviously just pulling on that Scotland strip. It's just mental. It's just something that you always dream about when you're a wee boy. So even to the day at the youth levels was a wee bit surreal. When I was playing for Scotland, we played against big countries, and there was boys that were at huge clubs that were playing against us. So you were playing against genuine like superstars. So it was just.
Is there any
here
that's playing now that you went,
wow,
you could tell?
I played against, to name a few, Nathan Aki, at Man City. And his team, I think, trying to think of the other boy. Is it Neres? I'm pretty sure he played. But the French team that I played under 21s was an absolute disgrace. Honestly, if you want to go back, and I can name most of the team. I'm not 100% sure on the goalie, but the right back was Amavi, who played for Aston Villa. Maybe you'll remember him. I'm sure he's at Marseille or something. Centre backs were Laporte and Longley.
Aye.
Left back was Mendy. It was Lamar,
Rabiot,
Tolisso and Coman, with Haller and somebody else. Big boy Haller that's at Ajax now. That was their starting lineup. It was unbelievable. But probably the best I've played against in terms of that actual game would be Rabiot. Rabiot was unbelievable.
I watched him against Celtic. I thought he was wearing a pair of horse clothes.
I was at that game, the PSG game at Parkhead, and it was just in second gear. Even that game I played against him, I came on as a sub and I'd pressed him from behind. He was getting a ball on his feet, and obviously I'm coming from behind him. So I think I'm nicking this here. And he's took a touch me outside his foot, and he even looked back at me and went the other way, and I've continued to run, he's away. I'm gone, and I was just remember thinking, wow, he's got fucking eyes in the back of his head. He's got fucking built-in, what do you call it?
Wing mirrors.
Wing mirrors, aye.
But that's some experience. But see, even at that age playing with A guys, and now you've seen what they've done. You obviously, you're talking about Rabiot, the new then, and then you see him now. That's just to have that experience playing, even just at playing against A guys. That's brilliant, mate. That's brilliant.
Well, the likes of Coleman was the kind of the biggest name at that time in that team, because he was playing with Munich at the time, and I think 3 days after that game he was due to play Arsenal in the Champions League. So, like, in terms of that, but there was John McGinn was playing for us, obviously, and we talked before the game about Coleman and what he could do, and John, I think John just went and he said, "I'm going to fucking melt him." So, first 20 minutes, he's absolutely melted him twice, and Coleman's just stood up and just done the signal, like, to take him off. It was not wrong with him. He was just like, "No, this boy's going to injure me. There's no point in me playing here." He just wasn't interested because he knew he was probably too good for that level. So, I just as soon as John smacked him a second time, he just stood up and just went, "That's me, I'm done. Take me off."
McGinn back then that he was going to be as good as he was, John McGinn.
Aye. In terms of McGinn though, like, see youth level and that, he was really, really small. And it was at St Mirren, and it was just very rarely played at the youth levels, and then he just came out of nowhere. He just took a growth spot, and just ever since he kind of got up to size, he's always been stocky in that and just naturally strong. But as soon as he got the height, he just took off. And at that time, at 21s and that, you knew he was a different class. He was a brilliant football player, and he's just brilliant at what he does. But when he went down south, he's the sort of player that, you know, wouldn't hamper him in terms of quality wise, and that he has the quality, but he's also got everyone else that he needs. And he showed that tenfold in the Premier League, and that's probably why he's got a $50 million price tag in his head. So
that's good to hear that you played against these absolute superstars, Declan. It's something that I didn't know. It's just incredible to think they're the heart of these guys. It's probably on about $300,000 a week now.
I know. I wish it'd been that up.
Definitely.
This is anything, obviously, for me, your stories have been brilliant. Hearing some of your experiences is top class, mate. Is that obviously Dufferm the new? I know he's a kind of probably try to push up emotion. Obviously, you're still quite young in the game, which obviously was your future plan to be, just trying to obviously play at the highest level as you can.
Definitely. I've still got. I'm kind of at the. Yeah, maybe touching your prime at 25, 26. So I'm hoping that I can keep kicking on. And for me, as you say, we're going for promotion this year. We want to get second spot, and it'd be a massive thing for me if we could go and get promoted with this team, because I seen it last time that when I was here, we got to the playoffs and we fell the first hurdle against Dundee United, but you could tell that it meant so much to the fans and the club. They want to get back to where they feel they belong. So that's the first major goal that we want to get, is get Dunfermline back to the Premier League. But in terms of me and my career, I want to go and I want to play at the highest level I possibly can. I've always been like that. Just want to play games, but I want to do it at the highest level I can. So I think that's anybody's aspiration, but I'm kind of in the mindset and all, like, I would love to go abroad or just anywhere, just go and try something and experience something, like
experience something different,
America and stuff like that. I'm open to all that, and maybe try that one day if it comes up. So just, but obviously, as I said, the main aspiration is to play at the highest level you possibly can.
If you had a choice of any country and say world football, where would you like to play?
Obviously, you've got Spain in that, but the football's brilliant, but I think the diving about in that would blow my head off. I would end up fighting with people every week because they're diving. But aye, just in terms of technical ability and all that, Spain, no, that's really good football. But in terms of living and all that, I would quite like to try America or even Australia. I know that the league in Australia is not a major league right now, but just the lifestyle and that, in terms of that, I would like to try that. But if you had the aspirations, I would love to go and play in Germany. Germany's when I was at Fleetwood, we played Borussia Dortmund B, and they had a good few players that are actually playing first team playing, so they had quite a big support. It was just like a wee training ground that we played them at, and they had quite a few thousand fans there to watch. And you could just tell, like, see watching German teams on the telly, and the fans are just brilliant. And I would just love to play in the sort of atmospheres we can, because even the small clubs in Germany are backed to the hilt. You very rarely see an empty stadium in Germany.
Do you know earlier, Declan, that when you buy a season book in Germany, you get a free rail ticket to go to the away games and stuff in Germany? Yeah.
That's what I mean. It's massive. Like, you like, see that?
Count for a season book for Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, and that's all included. It's all about the football and fans.
That's the thing. Like, you see these clubs like Borussia Dortmund, as you say, it's buttons compared to other major clubs in the world for season tickets. And you see the proper look out for the fans, and they get the backing because of it. And I think it was a couple of years ago when the whole Borussia Dortmund season ticket thing came out, and they were comparing it to Arsenal, and Arsenal's, I think, worst seats in Emirates are like £1,200 a year. It's just I know living in London is everything's higher priced anyway, and living's higher priced, but just scary money for these big clubs, and I think the whole German outlook on it is refreshing in terms of that.
Definitely.
Yes, it is, mate. I think me and Robert will appreciate our time. I know Robert has some brilliant stories, especially against...
Really good, Declan. I've been just sitting enjoying your stories, really. Did strip back stories just for a normal guy that's done well for a housing scheme in Glasgow. It's been brilliant.
Aye, it's been brilliant to talk to you 2 years, and I know Ryan for school and that, so it was easy to come on and chat away. And you sat there and listened. There's not many people listening to me. My sister's sitting next to me and she's all better.
Me and Ryan also could listen all day long.
As I said, mate, I do really appreciate your time. Hopefully, I just continue, obviously, the career doing well. Hopefully. We see you again, Sierra, next year in the Premier League, mate. But again, Declan, thanks a lot for your time. Robert,
good luck again, mate. Declan as well.
All right, thank you very much.
And that'll be us in the South Line for our podcast. That was a podcast with Declan McManus. Declan, take care, mate. Keep well. Robert, I want to see you again, mate. Thanks a lot, guys. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads. He can't deny the need to fly.